And you can keep resting if it feels right, if you're lying down, or if it feels natural to come to seated, that's great too. And we're going to come back together and debrief a little bit. So at first, I'm more than happy to open it up to, like I would in a class, to give you an opportunity to talk about any reflections from your practice that just unfolded. Because it's so rare that we get to talk about what happens in meditation, you know? And we're all in this field together, supporting one another. So I invite you to come forward if there's anything you'd like to share in reflection of this particular practice, or any questions around the practice.
Fred, do you have a question? Okay, I'm going to ask you to go off video then for now, please. Thanks.
So I see a comment from Jigna that said, my spine softened and joints released. Yeah. And feel free to come forward if there's anything you'd like to share. Jigna in particular, that may be it.
So, Stephanie.
Yeah.
The moment I noticed my spine softening,
mm-hmm.
I felt there was so much release. There was more length in my torso.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of gave way to my limbs,
mm-hmm.
joints to start feeling more softness.
Mm-hmm.
And that just eased my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even now, when I'm just sensing my hands and feet, there is so much softness.
Mm.
So it feels almost like applying butter on the toast.
It feels almost like a what? Can you say that again? Sorry.
Almost like applying butter on the bagel.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Butter on a bagel. I love that. We'd all like to feel like that, I imagine. You know, it's such a beautiful description, Jigna, and thank you for coming forward. And it's just such a beautiful description of when there's a liberation of bound tensions, you know, and there's a natural extension, a softening that unfolds, and we're restoring our body back to its natural functioning, and you're describing that so beautifully. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for the lovely practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Anybody else want to share a reflection? What was it like to open? I was working with stillness and witnessing presence and being more kind of on a continuum a little bit. And I'm wondering what that was like for anyone. And I see you coming forward, Jamil. So you may want to share a different reflection. Thank you for coming forward. Hi.
Yeah. Hey, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me okay?
Sure can. Thanks for checking in.
Yeah. So much like when I did my trauma-informed yoga, there was this inability or desire to externally orient maybe about mm-hmm. 3/4 the way in.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious what your reflections are on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that external orienting, I also had feelings or impulses to move,
mm-hmm.
twitching in my groin, which I've experienced before, kind of like a nervous system reset, but curious to know what your experiences on that, and then how would you advise us to, when we have the sensation to move, how would we navigate through those feelings of wanting to move or even externally orient?
Mm-hmm. So when you were describing the desire, I think you said at the beginning, 3/4 of the way through, you did not want to externally orient. Is that correct? Or did I misunderstand you?
I'm pretty flat right now. 3/4 of the way in, I wanted to open my eyes and to externally orient.
Yeah.
It feels very overwhelming to stay that focused.
Yeah. So I think we go with our intuition. So I would invite you to open your eyes and begin to externally orient.
Okay.
But here's what I invite you to do. Whatever you're tapping into, to whatever degree of inner resource, right? Inner resource or being or witnessing, whatever that is, as you begin to externally orient, and what I hear that means is coming more out of the meditation, feeling more in the here and now, opening your eyes, do that, and perhaps still feeling that part of you that's deeply at ease or at peace, if it's accessible. So we're trying to feel that bridge. So what I'd like to invite everyone to do is to orient to the inner resource and orient to being little and often. And we want to pair that in. Not just when we're blissed out in meditation, but also when the body starts to come alive. And sometimes that feels agitating, right? It can be a surprising agitation where we've been so deep and all of a sudden it's like a slight agitation that brings us out. That's just the bubbling up. So first we need to check it out. Is it important for us to go ahead and open our eyes? Or is it okay to meet this agitation? Not with a judging mind, not with an analyzing mind, not with a should. We don't want the tyranny of shoulds, but just as a curiosity. And if it's yes, there's agitation that's just here sometimes. Sometimes we're really deep and all of a sudden we're not. And that can be agitating and or disorienting. I'm not suggesting that that's what happened for you. I'm just giving lots of comments of what I've know to be true and seen to happen either in myself or in my students. So yeah, I don't have any problems. I think there's wisdom, but we need to check it out first. Is it, and sometimes, because sometimes we may externally orient and we reground and we open our eyes and we feel the world awakening in us. We feel ourselves coming back online. We can still feel that sense of peace that's here too. It hasn't all the way gone. And then either we're just awake and enjoying that and transitioning slowly while the rest of the meditation is unfolding. Or we might find that now our eyes are open and now we're opening to the meditation again all of a sudden. And it's a new experience and we're doing it eyes open.
Mm. I love that offering. Thank you so much.
We do. You're so welcome. And I'm so glad you brought this forward because it's listening. It's this great intuitive listening to what feels right to you. And we don't want it to be state specific. So on retreat, we're often inviting everybody to do any of the meditations with eyes open or eyes closed for a while, eyes open for a while, eyes closed for a while, you know? So I don't see any problem with it. And, I say just do what feels right to you.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing and teaching this practice. It's very powerful.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for coming forward. It's a pleasure. Yeah. Yeah, we have a couple of comments here. So I'll go with, they're pointing at each other. I'm going to go with Leandra. And if you're comfortable coming over, I think it'd be great for people to see you. And okay.
So my experience was I wasn't sleeping, but I didn't remember most of it. But I know I wasn't sleeping. So I guess my question is, and I felt sort of similar to the last person. Well, more of like maybe what you're describing of like all of a sudden it was like jarring. I was like kind of out of it, or like kind of returning back more to this room. And a lot of time had passed, but I don't remember any opposites, but I know I wasn't sleeping. So what do I do with that?
Yeah, you're describing the natural state that unfolds in Yoga Nidra, which is when we're not in our regular kind of conscious with the small c state of mind. We're not in the alertness of our everyday kind of thinking mind. And so we're in that twilight state, right? It's very much a twilight state. And as we're orienting and liberating what's arising, and I'm so sorry, Jamil, I realized I didn't answer the second part of your question, so I'm going to come back to that in a moment. But it relates to what you're talking about, Leandra. As we're orienting to being or shifting from needing to be alert in this way versus feeling ourselves as awareness itself, it's a reorchestration that's happening. And sometimes it just takes a while for that orientation to, you know, to fully operate, if that makes sense. It's already operating, but for us to attune to it. But there's nothing wrong. It's just sometimes we blink out, even though we're not asleep. Isn't that interesting? So it's like we're beginning to orient to awareness that's always here. And sometimes awareness is aware of itself, and sometimes awareness is present, but it's not aware of itself, if that makes sense. Does that make sense? Great. And so nothing wrong. It's natural, and it's that twilight state where sometimes we hear my voice, you'll hear my voice, sometimes you won't. And this is where, you know, deep healing can occur. Usually feels rather refreshing, not lethargic when we come out. It's something else, right? Yeah. So just be curious. There's nothing to do, right? How does it feel now? Feel great. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, So Leandra's saying she doesn't feel sleepy or tired, and that's part of how she knows she wasn't asleep. So, yeah. So this is just what the practice does. It takes us out of our regular everyday thinking, and we're opening into an underlying awareness that's always here, that's different, that's here, even if the body was in a sleep state. Right. So once this comes online, we can actually sometimes hear ourselves. I always say, if you hear somebody snoring, checking out, it might be you. And sometimes we find out it is. That's pretty cool, right? So, Jamil, I want to answer the second part of your question, which had to do with different sensations happening in the body, twitching, things like that. It can be one of a couple of things. It can be the liberation of tensions, of deeply held tensions, so that as we open into deeper relaxation states in the body-mind, that they're liberated and they just unfold in various parts of the body. We'll feel twitches and twinges and energetic releases and physical vibrations. Sometimes it'll pulse, and then open up. There's any of these things can happen. And then other times, and I don't necessarily think this is what Jamil was talking about, but other times we can have something called myoclonic jerks. And that's where you can feel like you're falling, or all of a sudden the whole body is like, you know, and it like glitches. And that's something that happens when we're in the hypnagogic state or the hypnopompic state. And these are the hypnagogic state is when we're shifting at first from being alert into starting to ease into sleep, but we haven't hit that first phase of sleep. And it's where, you know, you can hear weird voices, or you can have like hallucinogenic kind of things, and you can have these myoclonic jerks. It can also, hypnopompic is when we're coming out of sleep and we're starting to become alert. And the latest I've read on these myoclonic jerks is that they think it's just a desynchronization of the body or the body mind, where the body's starting to relax and there's these electrical impulses that are releasing, and it desynchronizes and it gets really funky. So that can be something that happens too. So I hope that's helpful. But there is a reorchestration. Remember, we were saying like the liberation is of sensations. We liberate psychic energy, which is the emotions, the beliefs, the memories. We release energy. You know, some of you might feel effervescence or bubbling or streams of sensation in your body. All of this is natural liberation that happens as we deepen and deepen into these meditative states. So, yeah. Kristen, is there still something that you'd like to share? Or, oh, Kristen's, okay. So Kristen was saying her that Leander's question was her exact question. So, great. Yeah, it's this liminal space that we're starting to open into in Yoga Nidra. And these are classic examples. I fell asleep, and I, you know, Kristen was just saying, I think I did fall asleep and I could hear myself sleeping, but yet there's something here that was alert, but it's not like that I'm alert now, right? That's awareness that's coming online, and we're starting to open into that. That's here regardless of the changing state of consciousness. That's what you're tapping into. And it's accessible to all of us. Jennifer, feel free to chime in at any point if you'd like. And we can also open this up for Jennifer and I if you have any questions about what we've been talking about throughout every day, that, you know, anything that we've talked about so far. Hi, Jennifer. We still have 10 minutes, so what a luxury. Mm-hmm.
We have a question from an online student.
Yeah.
So it says, do we ever invite the opportunity to explore the physical essence when they are words or felt sense?
So I didn't hear that, because you, on our end, you were going a little in and out. It sounded like, do we ever invite in, and then I lost it.
Do we ever invite the opportunity to explore the physical essence when they are exploring words or felt sense?
Do we ever invite in the opportunity to explore a physical
essence?
What was essence?
Yes.
When, what was the last part? Look, I'm leaning in as if that's going to help. Like, what does this do? The last part, sorry, Denny Shay.
When they are exploring the words or felt sense.
So I assume this is a question for one-on-one. Barbara, it looks like it's your, no? Okay, it's a question for one-on-one. Hold on just a second. So,
No, it was actually in regards to when you were doing the, writing the words, and you said bored, and you said if people can't sense it, do we ever invite them as an opportunity to say, right now, how, if you were to be bored, how would your body, how would you physically express that? And then let them, that's my question.
Perfect. Yes. The answer is definitely. Thank you for clarifying. Yeah, it's a great way. Mm-hmm. Yep. You're welcome. Oh, yeah. Feedback. Yes. Yep. So we're muting me, Jennifer.
Is there any other questions coming up, or shall we pull one from the list?
I have the list ready if we want to do the list. I have nothing. Nobody's raising the hand quite yet.
Yeah, if there's something from the list, I know you put quite a few in the chat here to me earlier. But here's a question. Is there a concern regarding a client's emotional maturity or their cognitive status for the effective iRest work, or for iRest to be effective with them? Is, I think the question is. And as far as like clients' emotional maturity, I've been doing this with my nieces since they were babies and they're now teenagers. So for that, I just go where they could go. But I haven't worked with folks having cognitive issues in this, with this. Harry, have you?
Yes, I have. And I've simply modified the protocol for people who are neurodiverse, including mild intellectual disabilities, autism spectrum disorder, working with people who are alexithymic, they have difficulty connecting words and emotions is very interesting, and they can benefit considerably. And you modify it. Yeah, there's no, I've not found any sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, contraindications to it.
Thanks, Harry. Anything you want to add to that, Stephanie? Okay. Another question here. I think we have enough. We've got five more minutes. If each iRest is completely individual, are we just using this time frame for training, or do we as iRest teachers try to target like a 30-minute time frame per session? And I'm not sure if this is for a dyad or group session. I'm wondering if the person who wrote this question, if you're comfortable coming up and if there's more you want to say about it. But I would say, if I'm doing a group iRest, typically like the class, like Stephanie mentioned, 60 minutes, 75 minutes. If I'm doing one-on-one, it's typically a bit longer, probably about 35, 40 minutes with some time to check in at the beginning and time for debrief at the end throughout an hour. So it depends. Hope I'm answering that question in the way it was being asked. And let's see. There's a question here about mirror neurons in context of resonance. And I don't have any way to say that, but I see Stephanie, you're nodding your head. Would you go ahead? Go for it, Stephanie.
Sure. And Harry, feel free if you want to speak to that. You popped in. Why don't you go first and then I'll follow? Yeah.
Well, if I understand the question, you know, mirror neurons are very important in terms of interpersonal resonance. There's some studies show that some of the hype about it has been a bit exaggerated, but there's also other brain structures in the, you know, so-called limbic system and how the right hemispheres of people are always communicating. In ways that enhance empathy, enhance connectivity. And I think all this gets really strongly engaged in the dyad process.
Thanks, Harry. Absolutely. The only thing I'd add, if you're unfamiliar with mirror neurons, the way that we understand that they work, and this is for people that are not neurodiverse. So of course, for neurodiverse people, sometimes they may not have mirror neurons that function in this way at all. But for a neurotypical person, we have these mirror neurons that when we see someone experiencing something, doing something, feeling an emotion, going through an experience, it's as if we're experiencing it ourselves. So we can deeply relate. And so it's allowing us to have this capacity for empathy. And certainly it can be helpful for us in the sense of resonance and in a sense of meeting with somebody as we're sitting with them one-on-one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. I think you want to just wrap it up, Jennifer? Does this feel like a good time?
Yeah, it feels like a good time to wrap it up. We've got like less than a minute till 6 p.m.
I did want to say one last thing, and then I can hand it over to you, Jennifer, if you'd like to wind us down. But I did see that there was a question about if I used a script. And just to let everybody know that Jennifer and I do not use scripts at all. This is all free form, our offering of iRest. We have certain, you know, bullet points of what we know we want to cover. So we're doing different specific, targeting specific parts of the practice for you with each practice, but there's no script at all. And we're just offering this out of our years of being on script for many, many years. And then over time, finding our own language in our own way. And now we're script free. And that's what happens through certification process and things like that, which we'll talk about later. But thank you all for such a wonderful day. Thank you, Jennifer, and Harry and everybody that's come forward. And I'll hand it over to you, Jennifer, if there's anything you want to say before we wrap up.
Just want to say have a good night, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
8:30 Pacific time.
We do have one mention from Suzanne. So I'm going to thank Suzanne because she said maybe we should mention the readings for if people want to read ahead.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Yeah. So I have that in front of me. You want me to just go ahead and read that, Jennifer? Do you have it?
Please, yeah. Please.
Okay. So tomorrow we're going to go through, I don't know that that's right. I think I might have told you the wrong thing. Let me look at the schedule. Sorry, everybody. Yeah, I had you write what we're doing for Saturday. Sorry. So we're going to, Denisha, do you have this pulled up or does anybody have it pulled up?
Like it's up now. Gabrielle posted it. It looks like we're touching tomorrow. If you want to read ahead on cognitions and then joy and equanimity, which is chapters 7 and 8 in the manual. And then to prepare for tomorrow's practices, if you like, you could read ahead the Vijnanamaya Dyad co-meditation in the resource guide, page 63 through 66. And then the group script, it's group script number 2. And that's also in that reference guide in pages 21 through 26. Thank you for posting that, Gabrielle. And Suzanne for remembering. So we'll say good night. So looking forward to seeing you tomorrow.